Okay. Welcome, everyone. Did you have a good lunch time? Was it good? Was everything okay? Okay, great, great. So welcome to our session about what's new in Windows Server 2016 Hyper-V. I'm proud to present here with Carsten Rockfall. My name is Thomas Maurer. You probably already know me. I'm a cloud architect working for ITNetics, and I'm also a Hyper-V MVP. So, Carsten, you want
to
start?
Yeah, I'm also proud to present with you. We are Gen 1 Hyper-V MVP, and he is Gen 2. So he's all the new stuff. I'm a Hyper-V MVP in the fifth year now from Germany. Maybe you hear it a little bit in my language. And we want to show you some of the new stuff that is coming in Hyper-V 2016. So let's start. First, a little bit... A slide that I like a lot, because I am sometimes asked, Hyper-V, is it used by customers? And this is a study done by IDC, where the hypervisor usage is shown, and Hyper-V is gaining market share. And we are now at 30%, and VMware is at 46%. So Hyper-V is increasing a lot, and I think most of you know Hyper-V is free. So all the cool features that are now in Windows Server 2012 R2 are free. There is a free Hyper-V server that you can use with all the great stuff. So let's look about onto the some different areas. We divided the presentation in several areas. We will first start with security. What's coming in security in Windows Server 2016? So first, let's talk about a problem. When you have a hypervisor and you are running a virtual machine on a hypervisor, you can't be really sure if nothing happened to the host. So maybe you have a malware in the host operating system, and this can infect, of course, your virtual machines. Or another problem is you have an administrator that has access to the console of your hypervisor, and then he can do things with your virtual machines. And Microsoft knows this problem, and many of you, I'm sure, know that Windows... No, it's Microsoft Azure, is based on Hyper-V, so in Azure you have the same problem. Of course, in Microsoft Azure, only Microsoft-trusted administrators are working, but the customer has sometimes a problem. I'm in the public cloud, are my workloads, is my data safe? So Microsoft is working on a model where you can be sure that your data is safe. So... two problems, malware on the host and the administrator. If you don't trust the administrator, you can do maybe with a virtual machine, you can save the memory. You save the virtual machine. The memory is dumped to the disk, and there is nothing happening. It's the pure memory. So you can look into the memory. You can maybe search for passwords and so on. So if you don't... So the problem is, if you don't trust your administrator, if you don't trust your operating system, there's malware, what to do? There are different scenarios, and as a tenant, we talked about it already, you can't be sure as a customer, am I on a safe environment? So what's happening here? Different scenarios. First, you can use hardware that has protection, that is enabled to protect your workload. For example, many of you know you can boot a system in BIOS mode, and you can boot it in UEFI mode. And in UEFI, there is something like a secure boot. So in a secure boot scenario, the system, when it starts, it checks every driver that is loaded if there is a signature there. And if this, if the signature is there, the signature is known. If someone is compromising your driver, your kernel mode driver, the signature doesn't match to the checksum and the driver is not loaded. So this is something with new hardware that you can do to protect, to get a secure operating system running with secure mode. And if you have a secure operating system, you can trust your operating system. So then Microsoft will introduce a new service in Windows Server 2016. It's called the Host Guardian Service. And this is a high available service running on more than one machine. And in this host guardian service, you can, for example, store secrets or certificates. And then you're on the left, on the right side, you see your guest VM. You can talk to, or the guest VM can talk to the guardian service and knows I'm on a hypervisor that is trusted. I'm running on a safe machine. So, and if you trust your system, and from the guardian server, you can also use a virtual TPM chip. So a TPM chip is needed if you want to secure your system, for example, for BitLocker. You need something like a TPM chip. In Windows Server 2016, we will have a virtual TPM chip for the VMs. And this virtual TPM chip works with a host guardian service to be secured. And then you can BitLocker your disks in the virtual machine, and also if you save your system, save your memory state to the host, it will be also BitLockered. So everything is BitLockered. An administrator who has access to the console of the operating system or the hypervisor can't use your data. He can copy it maybe, but he can't do anything with it because it's encrypted. And this is new in, or will be new in Windows Server 16. Here is another slide. Important is there is your signature is stored in the host guardian service, and your machine will only run with your signature, and you trust the system. It's only run on protected hardware. And something that I think is very important, if you have generation 2 virtual machines, you can convert them while they are running to protected virtual machines. Another thing that is happening in security, the UEFI mode was introduced with Windows Server, I think Windows Server 2012 R2, the generation 2 VM. And if you have a Windows virtual machine, you can enable secure boot. So your generation 2 virtual machine will only load secure drivers, and you can trust your kernel mode. It's not compromised because every driver has a signature. Until now, this is missing for Linux machines, and we will get this also for Linux machines so that we can trust the Linux, that it's not compromised, the kernel. And for that, it's already running with TP3 or also with TP2, and it works with Ubuntu 14, the long TLS it's called.
LTS, I think.
Yeah, and also with SUSE, and you can enable that with a PowerShell command because Linux needed a slightly different secure boot template. It's called Microsoft UEFI Certificate Authority. Windows machines have another UEFI boot template. I will show you that in a demo. And in Hyper-V Manager, that is available now with the TP3 build, you can also enable it in the Hyper-V Manager graphically. I will show you that. I will show you that now. So let's switch. So here you see the Hyper-V Manager. Let's first look at this Linux machine. I go to settings. So let's open it. It should be available here. So this machine is running. And I have not enabled secure boot. So I will shut it down and enable secure boot. Okay. I have to reopen the settings. Now I can enable secure boot, but I have the wrong security template. So let's see what's happening if I start this machine with the wrong security template. I will press start. Oh, I have to first press OK and then start. So this machine should not boot because the wrong security template is there and the driver can't be compared with the security template. So I will stop the machine again and change to the right one. And by the way, you also see here the trusted platform module. We can enable that and also the protection of the virtual machine. But my system doesn't have the right TPM chip in it. We need TPM version 2 for that, and this machine has only TPM 1.2. So I will apply that and start the machine. And hopefully, yes. It takes a bit. Okay. Okay. So now it's booted, and you see now the boot of the machine, the kernel mode is now secure. The system can compare if every kernel mode driver is not infected by some malware. So this was my first demo. Switch back to the slides. Another topic we want to talk about is resiliency and availability. So Microsoft is doing a lot of in this area. Most of you know there is, of course, a cluster. If you want to have high available machines, you have a cluster. You can build a cluster with every Hyper-V implementation, also with a free one. But there are new things coming in Windows Server 2016. One thing in the cluster is the virtual machine cluster resiliency. I have an example here of three hypervisors, Hyper-V machines in a cluster. And one is more to the right, so he's a little bit farther away from the other ones. Let's assume we have a data center here, and we have another room some 100, 200, 300 meters away where this system is running on. On these machines, you see some VMs. So when we get maybe a network problem, your cluster nodes are communicating with each other one every second. You have heard of the heartbeat, I assume. So every cluster node is sending a heartbeat to every other node every second. So we have maybe a network failure. We talked about we have one room and we have another room, and our switch is booting because switches have also software in it, and a switch boot can maybe take 3 minutes. Maybe you have already had those in your environments. We had it. And when the switch is booting in Windows Server 2012 R2, the other nodes can't reach the one node that is now isolated on the right. And also the one node on the right can't reach the other ones. So he will try to reach them five heartbeats, and then he will say, oh, I don't have the majority, so I will shut down all the virtual machines that are running on me, and the cluster hopefully start them on the other nodes. With 2016, there is a possibility when there is a network error, the machine will not shut down the VMs. The hope is the network connection will come back again, maybe after 4 minutes or after 2 minutes, and your virtual machines can still run. There's no problem with the virtual machines, only the cluster can talk to the other nodes. So if they are still running, the cluster waits a while to connect to the node again. And if that happens, the cluster is happy. We talk about the isolation. So now our node is isolated. If the cluster can't see the node, maybe for 5, 6, 7 minutes, it will be quarantined. And then the virtual machine will be brought down and hopefully started on the other node. So this will help if you have some problems in your network. And the cluster is also, he counts how often the machine is not available. So maybe you have a switch that is rebooting after 10 minutes again. So you have connections to the node, you don't have connections. You have connections to the node, oh, your node is booting all the time, because he has an error in some drivers or so on. So the cluster will count how often the system is not available, and if it's too often, he will quarantine the node. And you as administrator have to say, this node, I want this node working again in my cluster. The other thing is storage resiliency. Microsoft thinks if you do more with software-defined storage, software-defined networking, software-defined anything, maybe your hardware is not so reliable anymore than it was in the past. For example, a ZAN system was always on, or should be always on. Maybe that is not true anymore, because more and more cheaper hardware is used. And so Microsoft builds more and more features into the operating system, into the cluster, to handle more failure. One failure would be your system talks to a storage system, or your virtual machines are running on a storage system, and maybe the connection to your storage system fails, like here. So I have a storage fabric outage, and we have an error here in the connection to our SAN system, to our scale-out file server, to whatever. And now my virtual machines can't reach the virtual hard disks anymore. In Windows Server 2012 R2, the cluster is rebooting the virtual machines, and maybe on the other host. But in the new model, you have the choice that the virtual machines are paused. So the connection to your storage fails, the virtual machines are paused, the cluster node is trying to reach the storage again. Maybe it's coming back after 30 seconds or after 2 minutes. So the cluster recognized the storage is there again, and then the pause of the virtual machine is there will run again. So this is an option. Maybe in your scenario, this is better to use than shoot the virtual machines and start them somewhere else. Yeah. Then who of you have, please a show of hands, who of you have heard of shared VHDX? I would say 50%. Shared VHDX is a possibility to share storage in a guest cluster. So you have two or three or four virtual machines that form a cluster, like SQL Server, maybe a scale-out file server. You can also virtualize the scale-out file server. And they have to use a virtual disk from more than one machine. So this is possible with 2012 R2. You can share a virtual disk to more than one node and have a SQL guest cluster, for example. This is possible on block storage, you see it in the middle, and also with a scale-out file server on a file-based storage. There will be some advance to this model because nowadays we have the problem a shared VHDX can't be backupped. When you have a software that does a host backup on the hypervisor, this shared VHDX is presented to more than one node. So how to do an online backup of something that is presented in more than one node? You have to do a VSS snapshot on more than one host, and that's not possible in the moment. So this will be available in Windows Server 2016. And another demand of customers was, I have my shared VHDX. It's for a cluster, so it should be always on, but I need more space in this shared VHDX, so I want to extend it. And nowadays, you have to shut down all your cluster machines and can extend it and then bring them up again. In Windows 2016, it will be an online process, so you can extend your running shared VHDX. So Thomas is looking to the watch. I have already...
No, it's okay. You're perfectly in time.
Okay. Another feature in Hyper-V is replica. You get Hyper-V replica. I think most of you heard of Hyper-V replica. Please a show of hands who have heard of Hyper-V replica.
Woo-hoo.
Okay, I think 80%. Who is using it? Okay, great. Maybe 50%. So feature is great. You can have a two-way replica. You can even extend it to a third location, great. The problem is maybe you want to add another virtual disk to your machine that is replicated. In 2012 R2, you have one option to do that. You destroy your replica, so you said, okay, replica is great, but I want to add another disk. I have to destroy the replication, add my another disk, and reinstall the replication with all the first replication, all your data is replicated over the wire to the other side. What if I want to add a virtual disk to a running system and don't want to re-replicate again? In Windows 2016, you can do that. You add a disk to a virtual machine and can replicate it. And you have to say which disk you want to replicate. So it's not every disk, you can choose. Oh, I have three virtual disks, but I want only to replicate these two. Maybe not the boot one, only the data one. You can choose that. And you can add disks to the replica and also remove disks from the replica while the system, while the replica is in state. Another thing, runtime memory resize. Hyper-V has dynamic memory. So the hypervisor and the virtual machine talked to each other and decided how much memory your system needs and give more memory to your VM or don't give it. Not every workload can handle dynamic memory. And not every administrator wants dynamic memory. So another question, who is not using dynamic memory and using Hyper-V? So you are using Hyper-V, but you don't want dynamic memory. So some of them. OK, in 2016, you have the opportunity to change the memory of a running machine that has static memory to another value. You can increase it or decrease it without dynamic memory. And another thing, you see how much memory your virtual machine needs. So even for static memory, you see how is the demand of the virtual machine. You can see it in Hyper-V Manager. You can see it in PowerShell, how much memory I need. I will show a quick demo of that. And another thing is we can now, in 2016, hot add and remove network adapters. So if you need another network adapter for a machine, for exchange server, for example, you don't have to shut it down at the network adapter and start it again. You can do that while the machine is running. One caveat, you need a generation 2 VM. So it's not working with the generation 1 VM. So I will do a short demo of that, and then Thomas will take over, right? So let's see. Can see that? Yeah. I have Windows 2016 TP3 VM running here, and I opened the task manager, and you see my system has 800 megabyte of memory and is using nearly everything of the memory. So if we look at the settings, we see under memory, I give you that too, Thomas. You need that.
Perfect.
You see, I haven't enabled dynamic memory. So it's static memory. My system is starting up with 800 megabyte, running happily, and when I shut it down, it will also have 800 megabyte. But we saw in the machine, we don't have so much free memory, so maybe my system is swapping. I will change that to 2 gigabyte. So I apply it, and you see in the virtual machine, it's now, it still uses nearly 800 megabytes of memory, but there is memory free now. And we can, of course, also do it the other way. So I can, oh, this number was not right. I can say, okay, this was too much. I will go to 1 gigabyte. And here you see it. Here's a little bug, so it still shows 2 gigabyte of memory, but here you see 1 gigabyte of memory. And the other thing was hot add and remove of network adapters. And you believe me that it's possible with Windows machines, but I want to show you the feature if I remember the password, of course. Oh yeah, great. So this machine, no, it's here. So you see I'm not using Ubuntu often. So this machine has one NIC, you see it here, and I can add another NIC. Here we are, add hardware, add another NIC. I connect it to a virtual switch while the system is running. Press apply. You see here, another NIC is showing up, and we can also remove the NIC. So this is already working with Linux. Let's remove the NIC. And it should be, there it is, it's gone. OK, we switch to Thomas.
Yep. I need your presentation.
You need my presentation. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, perfect. Very cool features in terms of security and a lot of new features which really help you keep your virtual machine up and running. Even if you have changes on the fabric, you have outages, or you have to resize something. So one thing we're also going to talk about, or I can talk about, is upgrading and servicing of virtual machines and Hyper-V. One of the biggest challenges and one of the things where a consultant could make a lot of money was upgrading from different Hyper-V versions. So this was really a pain. Normally, I had to build, for example, if I want to upgrade from one Hyper-V cluster to a new one, I had to rebuild it. I had to buy new hardware and everything like that. So Microsoft introduced a new feature called rolling cluster upgrades. So as I said, in 2012 R2, or if you upgraded from 2012 to 2012 R2, you had to build a new cluster, move the virtual machines to the new cluster, and then reinstall the old node, so you had to have new hardware, right? So with that, from Windows 2012 to Windows 2016, you don't need that anymore. So you can do like a mixed cluster scenario. As you see, it's called mixed OS mode, where you can change one of the nodes to 2016, and then move the VMs to that node and do the next one and the next one. We'll have a look at that. So this is designed to easily upgrade your Hyper-V clusters, and it also works with some other applications and clusters as well, but we will focus on the Hyper-V part here. This mode is not designed for doing that, like for running that cluster for years or months in a mixed mode. This is only a mode which is designed for the migration scenario. So how does the upgrade process look? First, of course, you have a new feature or a new function, whatever you want to call it. It's the cluster functional level. So it's basically, if you look at it, like Active Directory levels you had. So they introduced that to make that happen. You have this Windows 2012 R2 cluster. What you do is you put the one node in maintenance mode, move all the workloads away, you take the node out of the cluster, you reinstall it with 2016, or upgrade it, whatever, however you want to do that, put it back into the cluster, and now you have a mixed mode cluster scenario. You see the cluster level is still 2012 R2, of course. Yet now you can really move workloads on that new on the new Hyper-V server. You will not get the new features for all the things, like all the new features which are coming in Hyper-V. You don't get the new features which are coming for the cluster version at this point in time. You're still running in 2012 R2 mode. And then you do that for all the other nodes in the cluster. And if you have upgraded the last node, you're still in 2012 R2 mode. And to use that, you have to update the function level via PowerShell commandlet. And now you can use the latest and greatest cluster technologies from Windows Server 2016. OK? So that's fine. That works great. By the way, that's one of the most tested scenarios, I think, in Windows Server 2016. But there had to be other changes as well. Today, when you upgraded or moved the virtual machine from an older version of Hyper-V to a new version, all the configuration files were updated automatically to the new version. So that means you couldn't move it back to the old version, right? And in that case, they had to change that, because in a mixed mode, that wouldn't really work. So they did, if you move a virtual machine to a new node, it's not automatically updated. You have to do that manually and upgrade the virtual machine. So there is a simple PowerShell commandlet to do that. That is even the case if you upgraded from Windows 8.1 to Windows 10, for example. If you were running Hyper-V, your virtual machines did not really upgrade itself. You had to do that manually. Okay, and there's another change which really helps in administration and making operations easier. It's about the integration services. Today, the integration services were updated with every host release, so we always got a new release of the integration services, and if they needed like bug fixing, whatever, there were like an update on the Hyper-V host, and then we updated the virtual machines. And one of the reasons that we didn't really have a lot of updates in that integration services, so to change that a little bit and make it easier, in Windows 2016, the VM drivers, or the integration components, are updated over Windows Update, or WSUS, directly into the virtual machine, and you don't have to have the same on the as the Hyper-V host is, so you just have the latest one on them. Good. We also have some scale improvements. I will go really quickly. One is involving backup. They did some changes in terms how Hyper-V does backup, how the APIs work, which makes it a little bit better in terms of taking snapshots on the underlying storage, or it doesn't really rely on that. That's one thing. Another thing is now they have built-in change tracking for backup as well. So before that change, vendors like Veeam and others, they had to build their own solutions to do that, and they had to build like kernel drivers and everything like that, which really weren't that preferred solution, right, in the environment. So they built that change tracking in there, and that now partners like Veeam or Altaro or other backup vendors can use that. Okay, then another change. I talked about VM configuration. Until today, we had this XML files with the virtual machine configuration, which you could edit, but you shouldn't have done that because it's not supported. This is now changing. So XML files are not like the fastest thing you can do, and if you're running thousands of virtual machines, that's a little bit, in terms of performance, that's not ideal. So they changed that to a binary format, VMCX and VMRS, which I'll show you a little bit later. Okay, other things I want to talk about, and I'll show you that in a demo, is production checkpoints. So we all know that problems with checkpoints in production environments, right? You shouldn't do it. Everyone knows it's bad, it's wrong, but sometimes it's just something you need to do or you want to do to make your life easier. For example, before you install an update or a patch and you're not sure if it works, it's easy to go back. Now, there are like two problems with snapshots. One is that operating systems and applications do not really get that they are in an old state when you revert a snapshot. That's one of the issues. And the second issue is that if you do a snapshot, you get this additional file where all the changes are saved, and this grows and grows and grows, and also impacts performance. So for the first thing, Microsoft comes up with a solution called production checkpoints. This is enabled by default, and it will help you do, like, the application now knows that it's restored to an old state and knows it coming from backup. Okay, and if you were in the nano session today, Christian already talked a little bit about or showed you PowerShell Direct, which allows you to do PowerShell remote connection inside a virtual machine without having network connectivity to that virtual machine. And there's another thing I want to quickly highlight before I show you the demo. Network adapter identification. So if you know about consistent device naming, which helps us on the physical in the physical world to know which network adapter is which one, they now also have this same feature in Windows Server Hyper-V for virtual machines. Then we have some file system improvements as well, so we can really create really quickly fixed size disks or do merge operations, everything. So ReFS is really designed in this release to be the preferred solution for virtual machine storage. Okay, let me do a quick demo. Because we have so many great things to show you.
You have
to show you.
Okay. You are in extended mode.
Yep.
On purpose, right?
Nope.
Oh.
Okay, perfect. So as Carsten already showed you, that's the Hyper-V manager. It didn't really change in that version. So what I want to show you first is production checkpoints. I have a virtual machine, and if, for example, I have a document open here or a text file, and I take a snapshot, or a checkpoint, sorry. You can see I can close that. And if I revert to that snapshot, you can see that it still opened the file, and it thinks it's in the totally same state, and it comes back. So you see the file is still open as I left it. If I now go and enable production checkpoints, which, by the way, as I said, it's enabled by default, but I changed it for the demo. I go to enable to production checkpoints, and if I now do a snapshot of that virtual machine, checkpoint, sorry. And I want to revert to that production checkpoint. What you can see now is that the virtual machine is off, and it will be restoring, and it will be starting. And for the operating system, it looks like it's restored from a backup. So that makes the thing really easy to do. So for application, this is perfect. They know that they're restored and not in the old version. Okay, I have to start it. And you see the virtual machine is boot, and the operating system now thinks it's restored from a backup. So that's one thing. OK, to save a little bit of time, we switch back to the slides.
OK.
Yeah, well, can I answer the question afterwards at the end of the session? Is that fine? So we can show you some other cool stuff we have prepared.
Yes, some cool stuff at the end, and we want to get some time for that, right?
Yep.
OK, I will be quick in isolation. When you were at the session about storage improvements in Windows Server 2016, Michael and I talked about distributed storage cores. So this is new with 2016, but there's already something there in 2012 R2. You can, for example, on a VHD or VHDX of a virtual machine, you can put there a maximum IOP this virtual machine can use. So if you have in your virtual environment, you have a system that is peaking or is doing something that you don't want, you can limit the IOs the system gets. There's also a minimum in Windows Server 2012 R2, but this minimum is only if a virtual machine don't get this minimum IOP, it will throw events in the event log. So you can be informed that there is a system that don't get the IOPs you decided it should have. But there is no really guarantee that the system can give you this minimum IOPs. And this will change in Windows Server 2016. We have policies there. There is a policy manager on the scale-out file server. It knows how much I/O is consumed by which VM and can distribute the IOPs that you want a machine to have. And there is a how it's called. It's a multi-instance policy and a single-instance policy. So you can say I have a policy where I guarantee 1,000 IOPs every machine that gets this policy. And a multi-instance policy, you can say, I have a bunch of machines and I want to guarantee this set of machines maybe 5,000 IOPS. So if you have a customer running on your system and you want to have them for all virtual machines of those customers a set of IOPS, you can guarantee them. And which of the machines is using the IOPS or how many is decided by the system. And I did an interview with two PMs for this thing, and they promised at Ignite that they will bring this feature also for a Hyper-V cluster. So imagine a Hyper-V cluster using block storage. You can also guarantee a minimum and a maximum there. There is another advantage. It's host resource protection. I heard of that. I can't test it, and I think you can't test it either. It's very important for Azure. In Azure, maybe there are some machines doing weird things. They don't they shouldn't do, call API calls all the time that are not allowed or so. And Hyper-V now can detect this misbehavior and throttle those machines so they can't do weird things. And that will be shown in Hyper-V. You can ask it. You see it in Hyper-V Manager and so on. It's for hosters or large scenarios. It's a nice feature. So I think enhancing the platform, is it mine? Yes, it's still mine. So Hyper-V Manager improvements, you know the Hyper-V Manager. It's in 2016, you get a new mode. It uses WinRM to connect to a virtual machine. It will support alternate credentials. So nowadays, you can only connect with the credentials you are having on the system that you are where you start Hyper-V Manager. Now you can choose, you can use a different user to connect to the other system. You can even connect to an IP address. And the Hyper-V Manager in 2016, and I also think in Windows 10, can also manage down-level virtual machines or down-level hypervisors. So you can, with 2016, the Hyper-V Manager can also manage virtual machines on 2012 R2 and on 2012. Power management improvements. If you use Hyper-V on a system like I do, I call it my data center in a box. I have a server on there. I don't have something like if I close my notebook, it will not save the system, and that's not so nice. And even if you use a Surface, for example, you have Windows 10 on it with a Surface, and there is a lack of some power management there. So there was an article by Paul Sirott about the Surface 3, and connected standby, and there was a little bit buzz about that at Twitter. One of those, I like the lady there, the Himmlische IT, that's my wife. They solved that, so now Hyper-V will support connected standby. This is mostly for desktops, I guess, because on a server you don't have a connected standby. But if you use Hyper-V on a client, it's a nice feature. There are improvements in remote FX. New standards are there. A new OpenGL or a more modern OpenGL is supported, even OpenCL. It's nice if you do something like VDI and need the graphic enhancements of a nice graphic card. You can do that. And the virtual RAM of the virtual GPU is now larger than in older systems, so you can have more acceleration there. Cluster management, yeah, this is a big one. If you are now managing on a system, you want to do a get VM, and you get only the virtual machines that are running on this system. If you do a live migration to another system and you want to do something with the VM that was there, you can't do that. So Microsoft will introduce a new cluster model where you do a get VM against the cluster and get the VMs of every node running. And now you can address these VMs. There is a new VMI class for that, and you can now talk to the whole cluster. So, and with that,
perfect.
I saved you some time.
Thank you.
So, back to Thomas.
So one of the parts, and also we talked a little bit about storage, about the Hyper-V feature, something you don't have to forget is networking. And the builds which we had with TP2, and I think also some parts of TP3, were not that ready for showing you a lot of networking stuff right now. But I may made a list with some things which will happen, and especially in this software-defined networking world. So Microsoft got a huge invest in that virtual networking stuff. They will bring VXLAN to the Hyper-V platform, so you have native support for VXLAN, not only NVGRE. They will introduce something called software load balancers and virtual firewalls and better gateways for the network virtualization part. So if you were dealing with troubles in the network in the gateway part, this has changed as well. We get some RDMA thing and much, much more in that space for networking. But what I really want to talk to you today, because we can now since TP3 is released, is containers. So Microsoft, at the Ignite conference, announced containers, which are basically, if you think about it, in the Linux world or in open source world, it's nothing really new, right? It's nothing different. But for us as Windows guys, this is something new coming to us. So they have announced two different kind of containers. One is called the Hyper-V containers, which is not in TP3 right now. It's coming this fall. And then they also have Windows Server containers. You can run containers on physical boxes, but you can also do that, run containers in virtual machines and manage them via Docker, for example. And you can see the funny thing here. If you're running Hyper-V containers inside a virtual machine, you have to enable Hyper-V inside the virtual machine, so you get nested virtualization. That's another cool thing, a side effect, basically, of running containers. So let me show you how that looks like for those who haven't really done a lot with containers before or haven't seen them. Oh, thank you. So again, what I'm doing here is I'm on my surface, I'm running Hyper-V, and I have installed the Windows Server 2016 virtual machine and added the container support there. This is just a normal core server here. Log into that box. As you can see, nothing special. It's just a normal normal Windows Server box. If I go to PowerShell, there's something new there. A new module. What's the command? Module. For containers. So there's no UI right now for containers, except you use Docker or other management solutions. So you see you have these different commands to get containers. And if you look at how containers work, you need a base image to start a container, right? You're always working with that images. So let's see what is there. You got this default container image, which you can use to start to create new containers. Let's see if I can remember all the commandlets. And I create a new command. In that case, I create a new container called my container, and I tell them to use that Windows Server Core container. Oh, I forgot something. Did that wrong name? Typo. Okay. Demo effect, but gonna be red.
Red is still narrow, right?
Because I cheat a little bit here.
Yeah, it needs a switch. Okay.
Let's use this one. It worked before, so I don't know what's wrong here now. But
I need the switch.
Yeah, I didn't without the switch, but okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Normally works without the switch. Okay, now it worked. Don't know why, but now you can see that I created a container. The container is off. You can also set get container. I see the container. Now I can go and start that container. And it's starting that container in the background, and now my container is running. If I go back and get container, I can do that. And I can now enter to the container and manage it via PowerShell. So I have a new thing here, which is called container ID. Go into that session if I typed everything correctly this time. So I can see I'm now PowerShell remoting into that container, and I can, for example, see the process is running in that container. It's a bit slow on my surface, but you can see that's all the processes which run which run by default in that container. So that's how you can create containers, how you can start them, and so on. You can also now, what you normally would do, you would install software, prepare that container, and then shut it down and store it back as a new image so you can quickly deploy new containers on the fly for your applications. So I'm not going to do that, but if you want to try that out, you can download TP3 for Windows Server 2016, or what you also could do, you can log in to Microsoft Azure, and in the new Azure portal, you can create a virtual machine with the container extension. So go to compute, there is already a preview for Windows Server container preview, and then you can deploy that preview. I did that, of course, already. So you can then just log in, and it looks as the same as my Hyper-V virtual machine. Then log in. And as you can see, I still have the same thing here. I can do everything I did. I can get container images. And see, I only have the default container here. And if you're working with Docker, you already got the Docker commands as well. So you can also use the normal Docker commands you had before you used for your Linux virtual machines as well. So you can use them to manage your images and containers. Perfect. So that was a quick demo of containers.
Okay. So you can have a lot of containers in one operating system. They share the operating system code, right? And you can spin them up very fast, start them, and so on. Great technology. I have to play with that. So we have some sessions for you. We have right after this session, we have a session in Miami about Storage Spaces Direct. So we don't talk about Storage Spaces Direct. This is storage from Microsoft for Hyper-V, and we have even the possibility to get the hyper-converged scenario with Storage Spaces Direct. So imagine you have some nodes in a cluster, you use local storage, and directly on those nodes, you use Hyper-V. Yeah, like other hyper-converged scenarios, Nutanix is here, one of the sponsors. You get that with Windows 16 as well. And if you are interested for that technology, we have a session. Thomas, you have a session tomorrow morning, right?
Yeah, exactly. I have a session with Michel Lucher, and we will talk a little bit more about Microsoft Azure Site Recovery, how you can fail over to the cloud or use Microsoft Azure to fail over between your own data centers. And then you have another session.
Yeah, and we have a session that is not on your agenda. It's a question, a private cloud question and answers. A lot of MVPs, infrastructure MVPs will be there. I will be there. Thomas will be there. Hans will be there. Jan will be there. And Daniel. So you can ask your questions about the Microsoft private cloud stuff if you want to. And we had a question, so we have still, I think, 5 minutes left. So we are now open to questions. But before that, maybe you show our sponsors. And please vote for our session, how you liked it or not, and give us feedback. So now open to questions. There was a question over there.
Yep. Yeah, the question
was... Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, The question was, can you use that technology, which is becoming ReFS, to merge snapshots? You can use that quickly deploy and merge them. And yeah, that's absolutely in there. It makes use of that ReFS technology. It's kind of like ODX for normal systems, right?
Yeah, and ReFS, you don't have to copy the data into the parent VHD, it's like a metadata merge. So it's very fast. It doesn't depend how big your VHD is. If you merge 5 gigabytes or hundreds of gigabytes, it's not a problem, or even terabytes. It's like a metadata operation in ReFS. Other questions? Here's one. Please.
Yeah. Very good question. So the question was, in that mixed mode, in a cluster upgrade mode, will that also support Nano Server? Honestly, I don't know.
And honestly, I don't think so. Because you go from a full 2012 R2 installation to Nano Server, maybe not in the first release, but we don't know. Other questions?
Yeah, there's one in the middle. The question was, can you use deduplication for Hyper-V?
You can still use it in 2012 R2 if you are in the virtual desktop scenario.
Yeah, but only with VDI.
For other scenarios, we honestly don't know what Microsoft is planning for 2016. Do you?
No, no. In the current builds we have, there is no mention of something else. Support for DPM storage VHDs is there, and VDI virtual machines. That's the thing, and normal file data, of course. But I don't know if that's going to change.
In the front here, please. Yeah.
So the question was, if you're hot add and remove network cards, the guest operating needs to be Windows Server 2016.
I don't know.
You showed it with Linux, right?
Please?
You showed it with open source.
Oh, I showed it with Linux. So it has not to be 2016, but I don't know if it's working with 2012 R2. I didn't test it, but we can maybe do it afterwards. Yeah.
You still have some ghosts in SOS, some remains.
Yeah.
Is that solved?
The question was, if you remove a network card in Windows Server 2012, you have this like hidden devices and this devices still, the old network cards are still there. I don't think there will be a change in that. I think the device will be still there. For me, it looks like it's a hardware thing.
We have asked the expert at 6 p.m. Down there, come to us and we will check. Okay? So we will try. It's an offering. Another question, the last one. Was there a show of hand or?
Oh, there
is one.
No. Just the default image. Okay, sorry. The question was, are containers only running in Windows Core, Windows Server Core? They should not. It should not be a difference, as far as I know, right now.
But we only use Core, like you. Everybody use Core and will use Nano, of course.
It will,
right?
Microsoft also promised it will run in Nano, so it doesn't really matter. At the end, it's the same technology.
Okay, we are. It's 1 minute to the end of the session. We want to thank you for being here and have a nice conference the last 2 days, right?
Thank you.
Thank you.